Good evening and welcome to this edition of Haunted Oranges Paranormal Podcast. My name is Nolan Meadness, and together with me, as usual, is my partner in crime, Ernie Alonzo.
Hello.
Tonight we have a very special guest for you. He hails from Northern California. He is the founder and president of the American Paranormal Research Association. I'd like to welcome Brandon Alves. Brandon, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. It's good to have you on. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Hey, Brandon. Good to talk to you again.
Now, Brandon, for those who are, you know, kind of unfamiliar with who APRA is, can you go ahead and take a moment for us and tell the listeners just a little history of who you are, how you got your start, and what you're all about?
Yeah, I founded the American Paranormal Research Association in 2006 after I lost my first brother to cancer in 1995. And then in 2004, I lost my second brother to suicide. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sent me on a journey, if you will, into trying to understand or trying to solidify if there is a possible existence of a life after death. When I founded APRA, I founded the organization to solely investigate historical locations throughout the United States. And not only that, I wanted to assure myself and the public that anything that APRA collected would redeem itself as unexplainable. And during that process, I was very blessed to meet various individuals who are professionals from technical industries who have been of assistance in helping prove or disprove the evidence and data that APRA collects. And that is a panel of various engineers, medical doctors, and scientists who do share a passion and interest in the paranormal field. And I've been very lucky to have had such consultants help me along my journey, if you will, with the paranormal and the American Paranormal Research Association.
Now, if I read correctly on your websites, it says you do a lot of historical locations, and I don't know anything about private residences. Do you do any of those?
You know, it's something that earlier on when APRA was founded, we did try. It's okay, now, first thing I want to make clear is that it's not that we don't like to help people. We help very many historical societies throughout the United States with raising money for the historical structure, but we do not do homeowner cases anymore for the fact that the ones we did conduct in the past was always, you know, we were blamed for a lot of this stuff. I mean, no matter what you do, no matter how you try and help somebody, if you come in and trying to naturally explain a quote-unquote paranormal event, it always seems to be that they assume you're calling them crazy and you have sometimes legal issues on your hands. So it's not that we don't like to help people. It's just the fact that a lot of the times with working with such individuals, it can really be a hindrance with trying to collect data and to research the paranormal, because it turns into more of a lifestyle issue. And, you know, a lot of the times people are experiencing natural occurrences, and when you make them aware of what's going on, they're not too happy with that 99% of the time.
Now, Brandon, when you say blame, what are you referring to?
I mean, for the fact, let me give you an example. In one particular case we worked early in 2006, one of the women was mixing medication. And the reason we knew that is because we had a pharmacist on the team, and it was one of the things that we did consult her on and had her look at. And from what she was doing was she was mixing various medications that did make her hallucinate at times. And when that was brought to her attention, that was something that she didn't take very lightly and thought that we were accusing her of.
Okay.
But hey, you know, it is what it is, and we just try and provide the facts for people, but some will like it, some won't. So,
all right, now, Brandon, your website bio says that soon after you started investigating, you realized the many mistakes commonly found when investigating the paranormal. Now, can you go ahead and explain what those mistakes were, and what did you do to go about correcting them?
Well, you know, a lot of times with various individuals and groups out there, they will go out and try to collect data, and when something is captured that they deem unexplainable, it's unexplainable. They don't go any further with their knowledge. Now, what I did, as well as the organization, is once we found something to be unexplainable to an extent, we wanted to take that to a professional who could be of assistance in helping us prove or disprove the data. And that's something, for example, with EVP. There's a lot of people out there that will tell you EVP is the most unexplainable form of data collection in the field. Now, that is completely not true, for the fact that probably 80% of the time when you think you have an EVP, if you were to take that to someone that was a professional in sound engineering, they would test that with something called a spectrum analyzer. And what that would do is visually show them what frequency this voice or whatever it may be is coming from. And a lot of the time, if you're dealing with a radio, stray radio frequency, stray cell phone frequency, many variables can imprint themselves on recording devices. So that's just an example of what APRA likes to do as far as when we collect something that we find unexplainable, we always consult a third-party opinion that is of assistance, and we try and stay as objective as possible.
Okay, now, Brendan, this is Ernie. We had a chance, me and a buddy of mine, James, a few months back at Rancho Camulos to go on an investigation with your group. I believe was it your group and a couple of other groups combined? Was that what it was?
Right, yeah. Rob did have his organization, iPro, as well as Bob Davis's organization, Planet Paranormal, and ourselves.
So that you're talking about Rob Wodlarski, correct?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, Rob has been great. He's actually he helped me get Haunted Orange started as far as kind of a basis for it, and I guess he had done a few investigations in the city of Orange before, so he was kind of helped me get a lot of the groundwork started for it. So he's a good guy. It was great to see him and finally meet him up there.
Yeah, definitely. Rob's a great person, and he helps anyone with anything they need in the paranormal field, and for that reason, that's what makes him, you know, such a great person to consult with such things as the paranormal. I mean, he's a fantastic writer. Every book that he's ever written brings much knowledge to many historical structures throughout California and the possible paranormal activity taking place.
Now, Brendan, talking about historical structures, when you find a location that you're interested in and you want to investigate, what do you say to the structure owner or maybe the property manager to make them believe that, hey, I'm not just another group who wants to get into this place. I'm the real deal. What do you say to them?
You know, one of the things that we do is we always send an initial proposal letter. We always send them a proposal letter with various references of societies we work with in the past. And one of our main goals is not just to go in and investigate and collect data. One of our main goals is to go in, raise the public awareness of the history in that particular location, as well as to provide access to the public. And through that, we host various fundraisers where the public is allowed to come in, pay a ticket price, and all proceeds always benefit the historical restoration of that structure. And that's one of the things that's really helped us with various societies is the fact that we're just not going in there just for a paranormal investigation, trying to be somebody through a means of paranormal investigation. We're legitimately trying to help preserve history as well as raise the public awareness of local history in various areas throughout the United States.
Yeah, I noticed that on your website, you do raise a lot of money, and I did notice that all the proceeds go to the historical structure of where you're investigating. Now, do you do anything to offset your group's costs, or is that still all out of pocket?
You know, when we come out and host these events, it's 90% out of pocket. I mean, we pay for our hotel rooms, we pay for our gas, we pay for our travel. You know, there are the occasional times where a society will offer us money for our gas and whatnot, but we never take a significant amount. We always make sure that if we take anything, it covered specifically gas or a hotel room. Because the reason we do this is to, again, raise the public awareness of history, as well as to keep these buildings going so further generations can learn from and enjoy.
That's awesome. I actually want to talk to you about something offline. Regarding a couple of cool locations in the city of Orange and Orange County in particular. There's a house that was actually raised and moved to a historic museum in Orange or in Orange County. And it's been sitting vacant on the property since the 80s because they don't have money to, I guess, you know, repair the inside. So the outside they fixed up, but the inside is a wreck. And so there's a few places like that out in Orange County. Now, have you guys done a lot of work in and around Orange County or the city of Orange in particular?
You know, we haven't specifically worked in the city of Orange or in the county. The closest we've been is probably the Valley, San Fernando Valley, and the Santa Clarita area, and the city of Los Angeles. We worked in the city of Los Angeles a few times, but not actually in Orange, no.
Okay.
All right, now, Brendan, I know APRA is a scientific method investigation team. Can you put forth your feelings on the use of psychics and mediums?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think the use of psychics and mediums can be something that is very useful with within an investigation setting. And now, when you have the possibilities of having, say, a legitimate psychic or someone that has quote-unquote impressions, and you bring them into a scientific-based investigation, and you try and correlate these two means of investigation, it can be very useful. Now, do I think that you should specifically go in and base everything off a scientific principle? I think that could be a bad thing sometimes. Now, do I think you should go in and base everything off of psychic impressions? No, I don't think so. I think through means of the combination and eventually through time, these two means of data collection being used together, it can most likely bring more insight into the paranormal field and possibly bring more data into the forefront that can possibly help in collecting more means of data as well as an understanding of a possible existence of an afterlife.
Well said. That is the best explanation of those two uses I have ever heard. I commend you on that. Now, talking about data collection.
That's why we have them on the show.
Good job, Ernie. Way to book them. Now, back in May, Brendan, you released the EFP device. Now, what is it and how has it worked for you so far?
The EFP was created by Larry O'Dean. He is one of the consultants to APRA. He's our evidence analyst. He's a mechanical engineer of 30-plus years. He's worked in the film industry on, you know, various movies, Back to the Future series, the Spider-Man series, Hellboy 1 and 2. I mean, the list goes on and on. But one of the things that we always approached Larry about was EVP. EVP has always been a specific point of interest for our organization for the fact that it can be tested very easily. So, I mean, when we have something unexplainable, we have it tested, and it's either a natural occurrence or it's unexplainable. So one of the flaws we always noticed was in real time, on location, if we were collecting EVP, we would have no idea we were doing so. And if there was a way we could hear this in real time and possibly see this in real time, is that we can further their conversation, possibly learning more. So Larry, being the genius he is and all these years of mechanical engineering, he put together a real-time EVP processor that now you can not only hear possible disembodied voices in real time, you can also see them on a LED scale. So now what this is doing is not only bringing a new sense to EVP, and now that you are listening, you're watching, your senses are heightened, you're more in tune, but now you can possibly further your conversation in real time.
Wow. Yeah.
What this device does, it just hooks up to your standard digital or analog audio recorder that has live audio monitoring. It takes the signal path out of that device, runs it into the processor, and allows you to visually see it. It also amplifies it and filters it 50x, and that helps you see as well as hear the possible frequencies of EVP. And now, when it's taking this signal path, it's not changing your recording in any way. Your device is going to record it the same as it always been. It just takes the path out and allows you to hear the quote-unquote frequencies that EVP is catered towards.
Now, I got to be honest, I fell in love when I saw that, when I was looking through your website and I saw the EFP device, because I guess what a lot of paranormal investigators out there want to do is, you know, they're getting tired of using the same tools over and over and over. You know, everyone has a K2 meter. Everyone has an EMF
right.
meter. Everyone has a non-touch digital infrared thermometer. So I guess what everyone wants to do is find the next best thing. What's the new thing that can help us further research and help investigators out? And I believe that's it, man. I think Larry hit a home run with that.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. You know, that's what it's all about for us. We're not doing this because we want to, you know, we want to make ourselves something we're not. It's not because we want to profiteer off this. It is a legitimate scientific tool catered towards paranormal research, and it would have kind of been a little of a bad thing if we would have just kept this device to ourselves and not allowed a public option. So when this was created by Larry, we all sat down and said, you know, is this something that we want to release to the public? And, of course, being the type of organization we are and always trying to raise public awareness, we definitely wanted to release this device to the public so we can help further the scientific research of the paranormal and possibly, hopefully, one day find more answers.
We were talking about a little bit before, right before we came on, was the Axe House murders that you guys went to up in Ohio, correct?
It's actually in Villisca, Iowa.
Iowa. Okay.
Close
two
enough,
two
right?
different states, Ernie. Two different states.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because we always hear about stuff here in California, but it'd be interesting to hear a little bit about a case that you guys did abroad.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty infamous case. It's considered America's greatest unsolved murder. It was an event that took place in 1912, where a family of six and two friends of the eldest daughter, Catherine Moore, the two girls were named Lena and Ina Stillinger. They were all murdered as they slept in their beds with an axe, some of which were decapitated, some of which were struck in the face. Mm. But either way, all eight occupants in that house were murdered. That case has gone on throughout history as an unsolved murder. A lot of people have investigated the possible paranormal activity taking place. And, you know, it was a place that was always on my top five list, a place I always wanted to go in and try and legitimately collect data. If it was going on there, we should be able to collect it, right? We went out there. We spent an entire night in the building, and some things happened during that investigation setting that still to this day I have never heard. During that process, we did have various times where we left the house unoccupied, completely controlled with various recording instruments from condenser microphones to shotgun microphones, various IR cameras, just to sit in the house and run by itself. And during three of those instances, we caught not only the screams of what seems to be younger girls, we seem to have caught the scream of a man, as well as the voice of a little boy saying, "No, what are you doing to me? Please don't. What are you doing to me?" Something along the lines of that. And when we first heard this, we thought, man, this is too good to be true. But if anyone's ever been to Villisca, Iowa, you would know how small the town is and how small the block is. We had that perimeter completely secured. We know we didn't have any outside contamination. So upon us hearing these pieces of data, we did send them to a sound engineer who did test them with a spectrum analyzer, and he did come back to us stating that it is not a radio frequency, it is not a cell phone frequency, and that it is showing up in the range that technically the human ear should not hear. So he couldn't give us any explanation as to what it was, but it does have the characteristics of a human voice, yet it doesn't register as a human voice.
Now, I've heard that on the clip on your website. I know you have it posted up there. And we're not talking about something that, you know, it might pass off as a human voice, or it might pass off as we're talking about a Class A EVP here.
Definitely. I mean, it's definitely distinguishable. You can hear the organic nature in the voice. You can tell that it's straining. There's vocal cords. But to a scientific instrument tested by a professional of many years, it is not registering as what it sounds to be.
Yeah, we're just trying to find out on your website. We were listening to it, and yeah, it's pretty creepy.
It's almost like the holy grail of what paranormal investigators are looking for. They're trying to catch that just perfect, awesome Class A EVP.
Yeah,
and
pretty.
I think Brandon's group got it.
Yeah, that was something else. But that's all on your website. It's APRA paranormal.com. And where would they look for that? Would that be under videos or data collected or what?
Yeah, that would be at the moment. It's under the video section. We are in the process of trying to find a new webmaster to update that site. It hasn't been updated in a month or so now, but we are in the process of getting someone to fix that site back up and get it back up to par where it should be. But you not only can you see it at afroparanormal.com, you can also see it at YouTube. They're just short videos that we make from our investigations just to give you a little easier way to see the data collected as well as the actual investigation that took place, the raw, uncut footage that really did take place during that specific night.
Another location that I was going to ask about is you guys did something at Wolf Manor. Now, is that the same as the Clovis Sanitarium?
Yes. The Wolf Manor was the former Clovis Avenue Sanitarium,
okay,
as well as Clovis Convalescent. It is now entitled Wolf Manor because of the owner of the building, Todd Wolf.
Okay. Now, what is the building used for now? Is it used for, does a lot of just people go and investigate, or what do they do there?
Well, actually, not many people are allowed to investigate. It actually it sits empty at the moment. I know that Todd Wolf is in the process of trying to make it a hotel, but as it is now, it's empty. And from what I understand, the city of Clovis does not like people in there, and not many people get investigated. So basically, it's just a creepy old building that sits right there off of Clovis Avenue.
Now, I think the Taps do something at that place.
Various productions have filmed there. The Ghost Hunters have filmed there. I believe Ghost Adventurers, as well as various productions from History Channel and Discovery, I believe.
Matter of fact, I think Todd was doing something called Wolf Manor Live for a while. It must have been short-lived, right, Brandon?
Yeah, actually, I believe he's still doing that. I think it's actually a public access show there in Fresno now. So I think that they are actually filming the entire process of the making of a haunted hotel and what the building used to be and what they plan on making it here in the future.
Okay, Brandon, I just want to touch. I just noticed on the website you have you've done Linda Vista. Now that's a pretty high scale place that lots of paranormal investigators want to get into down here in L.A. What's your take on your experience there?
As long as you sweep the building and make sure you have security guards constantly watching the building for you, it's probably one of the creepier places I've been on the West Coast. It's legitimately experiencing paranormal activity. Now, on what level, I really don't know. I've only conducted two investigations of the building, the former psychiatric portion, as well as the main hospital. And as you guys know, it's such a massive location. It's just extremely hard to cover. But during my two visits and the two investigations I did conduct, we did collect lots of unexplainable data, from anomalous photos to Class A EVPs. And, man, I you know, honestly, that place is experiencing something unexplainable. Now, to what degree, I don't know, because my experience with the building isn't too long-lived. But I do plan on getting back there here in the future and trying to collect more. But there definitely is something going on within Linda Vista, that's for sure.
Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but word just came down within the last few days that the Linda Vista Hospital is now under new management, as it always is. But apparently the new owner might be thinking about no longer letting paranormal investigations going on there.
Really?
Yeah, it really upset me because my group hasn't had a chance to get in there yet. And playing catch with the previous owner, Francis, trying to find him is like trying to find Waldo.
Right.
trying to get in there. As of August 1st, apparently, that was the word from a group that recently investigated there. And that's what they were telling me.
Oh, no, that's terrible. Hopefully, I'm sure once this new management figures out that there's money that can be made off the situation, I'm sure that they will definitely turn a leaf.
Yeah, most definitely.
Brendan, I had a question. When you guys go in, kind of switching gears a little bit, to do the investigations, how many people do you have, approximately how many people do you have on your team?
You know, it varies on the size of the location. As of right now, we're sitting at an 8-man team, but that really is based off of which location we're investigating and how many members are actually going to be needed for that particular field investigation. But as it stands, no matter the size of the building, we like to keep only two members in the structure at a time to ensure no contamination, as well as just to ensure ourselves that what is happening is legitimately paranormal or could be natural. So we make sure that there is a limited amount of people in the building as possible.
Okay. And do you does your team practice any sort of spiritual preparation before they go into these locations normally?
You know, that's something that that each member has their personal belief system, and everyone does something different. But there are various means of protection prior to going into locations, but it varies between each member. Everyone has their own belief system, and that's really what makes us what we are, is everyone has their own views and opinions, and all of us coming together with one collective thought really makes us a well-oiled machine, if you will.
Now, have you ever had a situation where you've had something attached to you or any of your team members or follow you home?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I have been followed home once, and I'm not just saying, oh, I've been followed. The reason I say that is because I documented this particular instance. We've been conducting investigations of a location in Santa Clarita called Heritage Junction Park, and we've been conducting investigations there for almost 3 years now. And during one particular instance last year, we documented the voice of a man within a building there called the Newhall Ranch House. And he has a very distinct voice in the fact that this person likes to walk around and almost like groan with agony. It almost sounds like he's almost been shot or broken ribs. It just seems like he can't quite get a lot of air, and he seems to just walk around moaning. Almost your classic ghost, what you would imagine a ghost would sound like. Now, we did document this particular person in the ranch house. I came home the following day. One of the members was at my house. He walks downstairs. He says, "Brandon, get down here." We walk down, and there's literally a 10 degree difference change between the room we were in to the living room. We were standing there, just kind of, you know, what's this? What's going on? As we looked over, my closet door opens by itself. Automatically, being the paranormal investigators we are, we grabbed out a digital audio recorder. We began to record when we documented the exact same voice that we've documented on multiple occasions at the ranch house. And this was solidified by the engineer, the sound engineer we consult. He did test this with the spectrum analyzer, and both voices showed up on the same frequency.
Oh, wow. Now, what did you do to resolve that?
Actually, you know, I took some advice from a few people that I've spoken to over the years, and I just walked out, and I told him that he had to leave, that it was not his house. It was my private space, my personal area, and that he was not welcome there at that particular time. And I followed that advice, and I didn't experience anything again. So it seemed to have worked.
You know, Ernie, it sounds really, really, really simple, but it works.
Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, when they first initially told me that, I go, "Oh, okay, sure, yeah, this is really going to work," you know. I went out, I did it, and I tried recording in my house that night, and I didn't experience anything again. So it did work.
All right, Brandon, now before we let you go, I just wanted to ask, do you have any, you know, interesting cases you're currently working on or anything you got coming up?
Yeah, actually, we're in the middle of a production that myself and Michael Rudy, another member of APRA, we're taking a shot at our first historical documentary with a paranormal twist, and this film is going to be called Orphaned, A Bygone Era of the Kern County Children's Shelter. And now what this place is now a Mexican food restaurant that used to be the Kern County Children's Shelter in 1910 to 1929 when it closed down.
Wow.
And this is based in my hometown. It's been a place I've been aware of for years. I investigated it back in 2006, and it's one of those type of cases that the public awareness is very low. Not many people know what the building used to be, and there is hardly any documentation on this building. And what we've been doing over the past 4 months is myself and Michael have conducted the largest research of the Kern County Children's Shelter ever conducted, and we came across some unbelievable information as well as the story of that building and the kids that went through that building, and we're making a historical documentary with a paranormal twist that's going to be released here in September.
Awesome, and we're going to be able to find that.
That is excellent, Brandon. I mean, I want to commend you on actually doing some good sound work in the field of paranormal research, and I want to emphasize the word research because, especially with the TV shows that have popped up and the movies, you know, a lot of people see it, think it's cool, and they want to go out there and do it, and all they want to do is go out there and ghost hunt. They can care less about the actual research portion of you know, what your group does, and you know, I just like to thank you for helping out and putting a good word and a good name to, you know, paranormal investigating.
Oh, thank you, man. I really appreciate that, man. You know, since 2006, I've worked as hard as I could. I've added pieces to this organization that I'm very blessed to have. I've been very lucky to have the members I have. And all together, we have a common goal, and we're all driving for that goal. And that's, you know, it's what we do. It's what fuels us. It's people like you guys that make us want to do this more, and we stay as true to ourselves and as true to the field as possible, and we're going to continue to provide quality work for years to come. So you know what? We really appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
All right. Last question, unless you have anything else. Ernie, did you have anything else you want to throw in there before we
wrap this up?
No. Okay. What a lot of people don't know is paranormal investigating has been around, since at least the 50s, right? And my question to you is, where do you hope to see paranormal investigating, let's say, 20 years from now?
You know, what I would hope to see in 20 years from now is to see that the scientific community addressing paranormal research as legitimate, not as a pseudoscience as they consider it now. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but over the last 10 years, scientific methods that have quote-unquote worked in the past aren't legitimate. And now they're starting to lean more towards, a fringe science. They're starting to open their minds a little more and accepting more odd, unexplainable means of scientific approach. Now, are we going to get there in 20 years? I don't know. What we're going to have to see is a major decline in the quote-unquote investigators out there that are modeling themselves after television and the various media outlets of the paranormal. But if we all come together for one collective goal and we all work together, we try and correlate data, that is how we're going to be recognized by the scientific community, and that's where I would definitely like to see it go in the future. Now, is it going to happen? I don't know. I have hope, and I really do think in the next 10 years, as the whole paranormal media starts to decline, the true investigators will remain.
Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid the release of Paranormal Activity 2 this October is not really going to help matters much.
but hey, it is entertainment and it is fun to watch, but do you base your research off of it? Definitely not.
Awesome.
Well, Brandon, it's been a pleasure. I'd like to thank you for coming on with us. I'd love to have you for another hour or two or three or 10. We went on to keep stringing our listeners on too much. But again, I'd like to thank you. Thank you for your time.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys. Great. I appreciate it. It's a blast. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
It was great having you on. And we are going to actually be kicking off our paranormal walking tours in downtown Orange. So we will definitely send out an invitation to you to come check those out. We're actually going to have a release party. And we would definitely love to have you out for that event and some of your crew. So
fantastic. We would love to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Excellent, Brandon. Let's do this again sometime, yeah?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would love to. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks again. And, hey, don't hang up.
Good night.
Definitely.